Five, four, three, two, one.
Be my Frankenstein.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of On the Range Podcast with Warhawk Tactical and Kelly Defense. Today is July 27th. How's it going today, Rick?
Mark, it's going good. Just want to thank the viewers listening out there for giving us your most precious commodity, your time to tune in, and appreciate all your support, guys. We are in the top 3% of all podcasts globally, and we could not do that without you. So if you're a first-time listener or even if you've been listening for a while, make sure you press that subscribe button. Leave us a rating review. I don't care if it's even just a thumbs up emoji, just something to go ahead, kick that algorithm. And just in a sidebar note, our in honor of Duco Teutonic Distillery Bourbon will be coming out here shortly. So
yes,
stay tuned for that.
Yeah. Looking forward to that. Yeah. Wherever you guys are today consuming this podcast, thank you for making this part of your day. Today's episode is brought to you by Killcliff. Go to killcliff.com. Use promo code OTR15. There, Rick is ripping the grape CBD. OTR15, save yourself a boatload of cash. Get yourself some great energy drinks with ingredients that do not suck. They are fueling the American dream, and they support the Navy SEAL Foundation. Love those guys. Also, when you're on killcliff.com, make sure you check out the Killcliff Cult Club. Sign up and go ahead, and the more you talk about, the more you earn. It's a rewards program. Also, we'd like to mention our partners, Combat Flip Flops. Go to combatflipflops.com. Use the promo code OTR25. Save 25%. I was rocking those on vacation this year. They have a lot of other stuff besides the flip flops. They also support a lot of great outreach. So go ahead and give them some support.
Yeah. So I'm just going to kind of burn some time here for a sec, just because I know Les is somehow got bumped off and we'll get him on board. But I'm just going to circle back to the whole Duco piece for a minute, because I think it's important. A lot of people have been asking. A lot of people have been checking and stuff like that. So, again, Teutonic, you know, coming through again. We'll have the bottles out there. Once they go, I'll kind of give you guys the link so everyone can check that out. Guys, don't forget Explosive Apparel Design. They've got the Blackbeard and Friends special. Duco series, whether it's the hoodie, the t-shirt, hats, flags, patches. I think they're even going to start doing some coins and stuff like that. But again, here's the beauty with those guys, man. UK company reaching out and doing great things. And oh, by the way, I didn't ask them to put anything to the charity. They just offered it. And if you kind of know anything about the British culture, you know, they're very good as far as charities and stuff like that. So they've already put $1,000 towards the charity, which is absolutely fantastic. The same thing with the bourbon as that goes out there. Again, portion of the proceeds will be going to charity. So I can't thank you guys enough. I can't thank you guys enough for all the support, all the prayers, all the comments, which I still have to get to. They have just been just overwhelming. But trust me, I will get to them here at some point, because just, you know, everyone's asking, and again, I'm not trying to make the show about me. We'll give Les here a second, and then we'll just jump on with Ron. But just been a little bit overwhelmed with everything. But the support has been phenomenal, and trust me, I will circle back. Doing all right. You know, it is what it is. But yeah, so that's kind of where we stand. But I think what we'll do is we'll give Les will jump on when Les jumps on. I mean, we got Ron on. So, and looks like Les is popping in as well.
Yeah, it's good to bring Ron on. Ron Danielowski from Distributed Security Inc. How's it going today, Ron?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thank you. How are you doing?
Doing well, sir. Thank you for being here today. Really appreciate it. And thank you for your service. Yeah, man. Checking out your guys' website, a lot of interesting things going on. Give us a rundown on basically what Distributed Security is.
We're a private security company. We're like a hybrid security company. What we really focus on is training people to defend themselves, their businesses, their churches, their schools, their communities, and really training the trainer, working on getting the instructor spun up. We've got a lot of material that we use to kick students off and give the instructors a leg up on instructing, rather than having to make up their own curricula all over again. So we've got some good instructors to do that for us, and it sure makes it easier than having to come up with your own stuff all the time.
So Ron, how'd you guys get into this space? Was it something you've always been kind of in, or how did that come about?
So it started, for me, I dropped out of high school to join the Marine Corps when I was 17.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service. I appreciate that. You're more than welcome. I joined the Marine Infantry, when I signed up. That's all I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Ended up really early on becoming a primary marksmanship instructor. I think it was like my second year. And that really, I like shooting. Mm-hmm. So that kind of stuck with me. I really like helping people master shooting. So that hung with me. Ended up shooting for the Marine team, ended up teaching at Weapons Training Battalion out in the West Coast, MCRD, California, while I was shooting for the team and coaching. Started private contracting, worked with a large firearms school on the West Coast, ended up going to the Department of Energy, training there with those guys. I worked out at Fort Chaffee there, training those guys, the recruits for the Department of Energy's nuclear courier section. Yep. Went from there to the Federal Air Marshal Program, Artesia, New Mexico. Taught out of FLETC, Artesia, New Mexico with SAIC. Ended up going from there overseas. Worked, first of all, with Dyne Corps on the International Police Program. Did a little teaching there, not a lot. Got picked up with Blackwater in Iraq. Ended up doing a lot of teaching there. Got in the first firearms program for the Department of State for contractors. Went through that. Did a lot of training there with the teams, with my team. Ended up in Baghdad. Eventually ended up as range master. Blah, blah, blah. And then came stateside while I was working Baghdad, started the school. I think it was, I'll say 2009-ish. And so, yeah, I've been doing this a while. Really love, I think I heard you mention it, Rick, get a passion for it. You really want to teach people how to save their lives, how to save other lives. And, when you have that passion and you know that it's not that difficult to do, you just don't see it getting done a lot. You really want to reach out to people and make it happen for them. So that's kind of my background.
Awesome, brother. And Les, we got you on. So glad you're tuned back in.
Welcome back, homie. Yeah, man.
I had to change browsers, man. That thing just completely took a dump on me. I'm like, all right, fine. We'll do the tech thing tonight.
Yeah. Les, just want to give us a quick rundown on yourself.
Yeah. Grew up, joined the circus. I mean, the army.
Thank you for your service.
Fell out of airplanes, broke other people's stuff, bounced around to lots of garden spots for a while. Ron and I were in about the same time. Well, in fact, all four of us are about the same age. I mean, we all started off in pretty much the same spot, give or take, Ron being over on the Marine Corps side. In any case, got out in 97, stayed in Alaska where I got out, ran a couple of my own business and some crazy stuff, just doing backcountry security for Japanese research biologists so they didn't get eaten by bears and, a few different things. Moved back to the lower 48, several years after that, I guess it was mid-'00s, when I did that. Spent some time manufacturing and ended up over here at DSI as the business development guy. But pretty much my entire life from the mid-'80s on has been training, teaching different stuff, fair amount of hand-to-hand stuff, obviously the firearm stuff, starting with the Army and different other things. So that's kind of the backstory about me. Not, you know, I don't have nearly the professional accolades that Ron does. So, you know, he's certainly the man in that regard.
You brought up an interesting point, Les, that I got to, you know, kind of exploit here a little bit. So manufacturing, what were you manufacturing?
Yeah. Well, when I first got out of the Army in Fairbanks, when I left Fort Wainwright, I was running a screen print shop. So I was on the bleeding edge of vets making t-shirts before vets were making t-shirts. So long before Ranger Up and all the rest of that BS, man, mm-hmm. I mean, I was out there scraping squeegees across screens and doing graphic design work and stuff like that. So then there was a point in my life when I was, working in cabinetry, kind of on the higher end of management side of things. And spent some time bouncing around that world. That's actually how I ended up coming south of the Mason-Dixon was a new job or two. And just, you know, I'm sure there's some folks who absolutely love that particular world. I just don't happen to be that guy.
I got to tell you, though, Les, I know you were kind of downplaying your accolades a little bit, but how useful that real world experience on the business side of the house would have been for me and Rick. We talk about it all the time. So, I imagine you're a very integral part of that team because that is huge, because you can have all the talent in the world. If you can't sell it or if you can't get it seen, it doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
You
know
what I mean? So good on
well,
you.
Well, no, that. That's a key point, and I'll probably come back to it later, but you know, kind of surrounding the firearms world generally, right, and the training world specifically, you know, that's a fair point, Mark, in that, you know, and I mean, you guys all know as well as I do, I mean, there's no transition out of the military, right? I mean, that's kind of a myth. Nobody teaches anybody on the other side of the fence how to run a business, right? And look, man, I've learned every hard lesson there is to learn. You know, I've screwed up everything I could possibly screw up and got creative and found some new ways to screw up that nobody had thought of before. And to be fair, I'm probably still doing it. But in any case, yeah, I mean, I think that's a really key piece of conversation that we should have, kind of about the training world. And I think this conversation tonight will start to play to that a little bit. So yeah, man, I mean, I appreciate the vote of confidence, Mark, and thank you for that. And yeah, there are certainly some lessons learned, you know, that I pulled out of that world. Would I go back to it? Nope. Very happy where I am doing what I'm doing, working for me, working for DSI. But yeah, I mean, there are definitely some things to learn over there, you know, on that side of things that do come in handy and give me an advantage in certain ways. So, yeah.
Yeah. And you hit that whole transition process, Les, you know, I got to capitalize on that for a second because you are 100% spot on. And, you know, I know we get a lot of veterans and stuff like that that listen to the podcast. Uncle Sugar does not set you up for success when it comes to getting out. And it's how do you, you know, I would tell anyone getting out prior to. So here's a prime example. Let's say your business plan is to bid on government contracts. Well, nobody tells you that you've got to be in business 3 years prior to even apply for your service-disabled veteran or small business, right? Yeah. So let's think about it. If I get out and go, boom, I think I'm going to have this shoe in, you're already 3 years behind the power curve. And it's all just education. That's one minute point.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about social. I knew nothing about websites, all this other stuff. Now you get industry partners asking you, hey man, where's the social? Where's your website? Under construction.
Yeah.
What does that mean? I don't know. You've seen it on somebody else's. So it's gotta be good. But no, you're 100% right.
Well, the key thing that I see and you almost banged into it, Rick, you know, that being behind the curve 3 years, you know, if you spend 4 years in, if you spend 8 years in, if you spend 15, 20, 30 years in, the reality is when you get back out in the world, you're behind whatever period of time you spent working for the machine. Oh, yeah. Right. I mean, because in that period of time, your peers from when you were 18, 20 years old have all progressed over that period of time where you haven't learned anything about the real world, right?
Yeah.
And so that is, I mean, it can be a significant handicap. And it, you know, it sucks. And we're all in a situation where we feel like we're having to make up ground and learn, you know, try to cram, you know, decades worth of knowledge into a really short period of time so that we can compete. But yeah, man, it's tough. It's not easy. But yeah, I mean, let's come back to that because I think there's some really interesting things to talk about that there in terms of business model, in terms of things that guys in this industry could be doing a lot better and understanding better, you know, in terms of platforms, in terms of social media, in terms of a lot of stuff. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's a really valuable conversation.
Yeah. I mean, we're already at a disadvantage socially wise. Because all the platforms, if you're anything firearms related to you're already in the hole. Starting off, you know, one foot in the shadow ban. So you're fighting that. But understand, it's a free marketing platform, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what we've learned is drive people to the website. You know, so when people ask, hey, where can I find you? Warhog.com. You know, because there you can find my social links if you want to go there. Sign up for the email list. That's the kind of things that I want interaction wise, not so much that, hey, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, whatever, they can all shut you down tomorrow.
Yeah.
But your website, you're constant.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot more difficult for them to interfere with. And so, you know, the basic rule is if you're operating on somebody else's platform, whoever it is you're talking to there, whatever interaction, whatever level of interaction you have isn't really yours, right? It's not yours until you've brought them to your website, you've got their email address, and you know how to contact them directly off of that you know, second party, third party platform.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's key. And the thing is, right, you know, let's take Instagram as an example. You know, I mean, Instagram, YouTube, any of them really, you know, you can look at how many followers you got, you know, whatever it is, but you know, that's not a measure of success. You know, if you got 500,000 followers, that's not success, right? Because the only thing that measures success is money coming in. It's all revenue. And so the only thing that builds revenue is that you have to convert those folks into your customers. And so if you've got, let's say in our case, okay, we've got our Online Defense Academy as a supplement to our range training, where, you know, we do the pre-range training so that we don't do a bunch of admin work and stuff like that on the range, you know, so it's all trigger time there. But, you know, if we've got 500,000 followers, let's say on Instagram, we don't mess with Instagram, but on the subscription side, we've got, you know, 50 folks. That's a horrible, horrible conversion rate, right? We're not drawing any revenue. And so we can spend a whole lot of time and energy, you know, pushing content on the social media platforms and see nothing in return. Right. I mean, we're just spinning our wheels. We're, you know, we may be a household name, but nobody's sending us a check. And from a business point of view, that's death. Right. So, you know, nobody pays the bills with hope and unicorn farts. You know, that's not how that works. So, you know, you got to have somebody willing. Yeah. Maybe that's part of the new Green Deal or Green New Deal. Right. So, you know, we can always hope, but yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of that sort of stuff that, you know, the content marketers, and the personal brand folks, you know, are just completely off base about, you know, a brand doesn't revolve around a person. Okay. A brand is a different thing. A brand is what your market says that it is after you've sold whatever it is that you sell, product or service, thousands of times. You know, you can kind of guide what you'd like your brand to end up as, but you don't actually get to dictate that in the end. Market's going to tell you that. So, you know, that's that cult of personality, personal branding thing is man, it's smoke and mirrors. You know, it's you know, that's tough to really capitalize on.
Yeah. You were talking about converting, followers from social to to followers on your website. And Ron, you may be able to get into this. And you had mentioned the online academy. Was that something that you had up and running before the pandemic, or is that something that evolved because of the pandemic?
No, we've had the Defense Academy up and running for, I think, almost as long as we've been a business. And the reason we did that is we strictly, as Les mentioned, we really wanted to segregate the declarative, the educational portion that we offer the students, you know, pre-course, post-course, all that, from the range training, so we could buy them that invaluable trigger time that everybody wants. So yeah, we've had the DEI up there for a very long time. It's almost as old as the school.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Because I know the NRA kind of jumped on that and some of the other, you know, with the online education piece, and they had the hybrid training.
Yeah.
So you guys were way ahead of the power curve on that. Good on you, man. How's that working out anyway, especially because of the pandemic?
The online portion is only there to support the range training. That's the only reason that's there. Right. Gotcha. So pandemic really had nothing to do with us, with our business model. It's the Defense Academy is only there to buy us more trigger time, you know, to leave that educational information where people can access it on their own time, right? Rather than our invaluable range training time or the dry practice time. So, gotcha. Yeah.
Well, and one of the things that makes one of the things that makes even, well, I mean, the DA even more unique is real central to our training is we have essentially a 12-week itemized daily training plan that we give each of our clients on the front end. So folks come to us, they want to train, that's fine. They sign up for a DA membership, and we outline for a full quarter, for 12 weeks, exactly what they should be doing, and then punctuate that over the course of time with the range training. So like our tier 4 combative handgun course is a 16-hour course, and we can deliver that as 2 days on the range, or we can deliver that in four-hour modules over the course of time. We can, right now Ron's working on delivering it 1 hour at a time as an adult learning framework over the course of 12 or 13 weeks. But we start with that plan, and you know, they can set the dates however they want. They can go through that thing at their pace. It's real interactive. We have a copy, they have a copy. And you know, so they can confer with us at any point when they're building those fundamental skills and starting to build those training grooves and avoid training scars. And that leads them right into the DA where they've got all those resources, all those training resources. It's not like, you know, if you fly across the country to one of the brick and mortars, and you know, if you get a syllabus or a curriculum at all, you end up handing it back in at the end of 2 or 3 days on the range, right? This, you've got those resources available to you for reference and study, you know, as long as you're punched into the DA. So, you know, we take a real, you know, close interest in making sure that we're prepping people properly and giving them a good baseline so that they can benefit absolutely the most they possibly can from the time on the range. And then after the range, you know, after they've gone through, say, tier 4 combative handgun, I mean, we're doing dry practice training in the mornings 3 times a week virtually, where again, we're working through that curriculum on a dry practice basis. And people can ask, you know, people can pop in, our students are there, ask questions, clarify things, so that they continue to practice after the fact. You know, one of the things, it was kind of interesting. It was 0304 here one morning, about a month ago, and I was watching the interview you guys did with Jim Earl. You know, Jim started talking about all the crazy stuff that we've all seen on the range as instructors, right? All the goofball stuff that, you know, you wish didn't happen, but it does, because there's a training disparity, right? You know, this guy's got more training than that guy, got better training than the guy next to him, you know, whatever it is that causes that. And it occurred to me, I'm like, wow, you know, you know, Ron and I don't deal with that to the same degree. We've seen it in previous lives, you know, but we don't deal with it, you know, to the same degree. And I think that owes directly to the fact that we've got, you know, a very prescriptive program through the training plan and through the DA, so that when folks get to the range, we know pretty much where they are when they get there. And so it makes things a lot simpler for us. It makes our instruction time an awful lot more efficient. I'd like to think more effective, but certainly more efficient. And so as a result, you know, that's pretty key. And you know, I'm the last guy who's ever going to advocate for the fact that there should be, you know, some sort of mandated baseline, right? I mean, I'm not that guy at all. But I know that as an independent instructor, it can be a distraction, and it can make things difficult if you've got a wide disparity of skill set or skill levels showing up to the range on any given day, just because they don't have the background that you know we all do. I mean, they don't have the same training level, same training time, you know, that sort of stuff. So, you know, what's really interesting about that is that we have, and Ron, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we have on several occasions made that stuff available to instructors and guys who were teaching kind of outside our organization. But we had, you know, we had a student that, you know, couldn't find one of our instructors locally. And they're like, hey, well, what about this guy? Can I go to the good range with this guy? Well, okay, yeah, we haven't certified him. It looks like he's got a good program here. If you want to share this stuff with him so he knows what you've been working on, and you can continue to go that same direction, if you see value in this, then all right, here, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So pretty much, go ahead, Ron, sorry.
I was going to say, you know, the real value here as an instructor is being able to build that relationship before they get to the range, right? It's not the first time they're seeing your face, getting to have this. I mean, I know it's the internet and people get out of hand, but when you know you're going to be seeing somebody,
sure,
right? You know, it becomes a normal communication space for people. Mm-hmm. And you have the opportunity then to see what the student schools are, how those align with the curricula I have. And then just as importantly, after they've gone through the training, 1 hour, 2 hour, 4 hours, 2 days, whatever, now they've got something to come back to, which was that individual training plan that you guys know, if you go to a 2 day, 4 day course, especially for somebody who is kind of new to whatever course you're going to, whether it's a Rider's Edge course or a gun course, that's really drinking from a fire hose. And then what ends up happening is, you know, you get stuffed with all kinds of neat, cool stuff, but it doesn't stick in here because then you go home and then they don't use it, right? Mm-hmm. Whether it's a driving course, whatever they're doing, they're not going to be doing the same thing. And so the beauty then behind that is you have that individual training plan. And then as an instructor, you've got however many days a week you're doing dry practice with your students, you can walk them through that individual training plan. Now you're just reviewing the stuff they went over, right? Digging deeper into it. You're still building that relationship. They're still asking questions. You're still getting in there. You're making fixes, you know, and the learning curve picks up tremendously, you know, and they stick with that. So that's the benefit of segregating that information and buying yourself and leveraging that time. That's the way I feel anyway. Sure. For that range, you know, as every minute I spend with a student, I don't want to be talking about anything I can potentially put on the internet that they're not going to train on. They're just going to, you know, intellectually absorb it and we can have discussions, et cetera, et cetera. But when we're on the range, I really want that work being done on the range, being on the gun handling, being on put on the tourniquets, asking those really relevant questions that you really want to deal with on the range, making sure everything's right, making sure they're doing it, getting enough repetitions in so that when they do go home, it's at least has an opportunity to stick with them a little bit. So by the time you get to the dry practice, it's going to be much easier for them to remember what you did, refresh it, and then make it stick because they're practicing it correctly time and time again through the online dry practice, whatever it is. But just to be clear, the Defense Academy is not a substitute for the training. It's only enhancing the training.
It's supplemental.
Come away with that. A lot of people come away with, oh, you guys do online training. Well, it's supplemental for firearms training.
Totally get what you're doing. It's like, hey, here's your admin stuff that you can do prior to, you know, so whether you want to talk about nomenclature of firearms, however you guys do it, that stuff that you can do, you want to say at home, cool. You don't need to physically be on the range burning time. Makes total sense.
Yeah.
But my question to you guys is, so is this like a subscription type service? Is it a one-time range tuition? How does that work? And then I take they've got to come to your place. So it's targeted kind of to people in your local area. Is that correct? Am I off?
That's roughly right. But yeah, so the DA is a subscription service. It's a monthly pay as you go. You know, the basic membership I think is $19 a month, and the advanced membership where you get access to a fair amount more information is $39 a month. So that's a subscription thing, and that's what gives you access to all the intellectual property that we've built, all the training resources, all that sort of thing. The physical range training is in addition to that. Our tier four combative handgun is what, $800 for 2 days. Roughly the same price as everybody else who's working on kind of the topper, the upper tier of training for civilians. But the big thing is really, guys, is that training is formulaic, right? Training equals instruction plus practice. Mm-hmm. So you're only going to get so much, from instruction alone. You know, if you don't use those skills, they're highly perishable. You'll never have a usable skill set just going to the range for 2 days. Right. That's unrealistic. That's not an expectation that anybody should have. You know, you've got to be able to continue to apply those skills in a realistic way after the fact to maintain that. Otherwise, it's just not there for you to use when you need it.
You know, shifting gears a little bit, I noticed in your website, which is incredible, it's a lot of information in there, target hardening, fortifying, having an operational plan, having a safety plan, immediate action plan. Is that something that you're being asked to do?
So our primary business is actually the enterprise side of things. Businesses, churches, schools, community organizations sort of stuff. And we're building proprietary in-house security teams, whether it's from employees at a manufacturing operation, parishioners at a local church, teachers and staff at schools. Essentially, we take small groups of those, typically groups of six, and teach them how to act as a competent security force. So the reason for that obviously is that, despite best intentions, law enforcement can't be everywhere all the time. Bad things happen and law enforcement will respond, but there's a critical response gap there between the inception of the event and when law enforcement can, actually get there and do the job, right? So what those security teams are designed to do is A, respond immediately, again, as the event occurs, and then create a coordinated handoff to law enforcement when they arrive. Saves a lot of trouble for law enforcement in that they don't have to identify where a shooter is, for example. They don't have to worry about breach of the door. The organization, the enterprise, can actually coordinate that on the front end. Statistically speaking, that's a much more effective method of dealing with things just in terms of cost of life. Because for every minute that an incident like that goes on, you lose, 7 to 10 statistically, either injured or dead. So if you can confront a situation like that up front or sooner, knowing that, again, statistically, most of those shooters will you know, either surrender or take their own lives, you know, you've got the potential to save an awful lot of life and property damage and all that sort of stuff, being able to intervene before law enforcement can be there. So, you know, we have a couple of other things going as well. We've got some quick response teams that enterprises have asked for. Essentially, that's a retainer basis, and it's a short engagement. So, you know, if there's unrest, if there's things like that, we can put a team on the ground while at the same time training that enterprise to defend itself in a follow-on manner. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of the target hardening and that sort of stuff comes out of our command school curriculum, which is a curriculum for executives who are looking to build out their own internal security forces. And kind of it's kind of the C2 piece for executives, and allows them to learn how to implement what we're doing. So yeah, I mean, there's a ton of different stuff that we do, but our primary focus really is the enterprise stuff. But with 5 to 8 million brand new gun owners out there, we do have the first gun owners program going right now. And again, that comes back to the individual training, because I'm thrilled to see all those new hands on guns. I really am. But I truly believe that they're going to be much more effective if they get some competent training. You know, they're not going to be a danger to themselves and others. It's, you know, that instrument is less likely to sit in a closet and collect dust or hold papers down on the desk or, you know, what have you. You know, that tool really should come with some education, because otherwise you don't know what you get.
And I think, Les, with that, what you're starting to see is now where ammo is starting to become more available, because that was the big problem. You know, you had guys purchasing a firearm that they could get whatever box of bullets for that firearm. Didn't matter what it was. Like, oh, that comes with a box of bullets. I'll take that. Well, I'm sure not going to shoot my box of bullets to train with it.
Right.
So
right.
I think what you're going to start seeing here is, as the availability is starting to get out there, now you're going to start seeing more of those first-time gun owners hopefully realize that, yeah, okay, you know, let's get out and get some training and be competent with whatever firearm they purchased.
Right. Well, yeah, and again, I mean, you know, as much as I like concealed carry, you know, concealed carry education isn't training either, right? And we all know that as well. You know, it's necessary from a permitting point of view, okay, for the government. I got it. You know, it's a box to check. But in terms of you know, actual proficiency, there's not enough information there. There's not enough instruction. There's not enough rounds downrange to get there from here via that sort of coursework. So again, I mean, you know, I would encourage any first gun owners that are listening to this. Yeah, by all means, if you want to carry, do that concealed carry course. It's not our thing. You know, I don't make a single buck telling you to do that, but don't stop there, right? Go on, continue to train, learn more stuff, because again, it's a perishable skill at whatever level you've achieved it. Doesn't matter how far you've gone. If you don't continue to use that and train it and practice it, it's going to go away.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as like your state, what's the requirement for someone getting concealed carry permit? Is it just classroom education? Is it actual range time as well? Because you've seen such a disparity across the country.
Every state's different.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I've lived in states where there was no training requirement whatsoever. Currently, I'm in VA, and you can do it via internet certificate. If you're a vet, there's former law enforcement, there's no training requirement. You know, that may change at some point. I don't know. I mean, they change laws all the time, right? Sure. Ron's over by the Mississippi. He's got a whole different set of criteria over there.
Don't even get me started on Illinois, man. It's a 16 hours of death by PowerPoint, man. And they call it training. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I
noticed you didn't mention that in your list of accolades at the beginning of the show. That'd have been my number one, right?
Yeah. So, no, it's horrible, man. I you know, and it ruins students.
Sure.
You know, I mean, it ruins students. I have like a major bone to pick with that kind of shit, man. I'm not kidding you.
Yeah.
Because 16 hours in a classroom in their head, well, this is firearms. This is firearms training. This is what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I never want to do this again. That was the most painful thing I've ever done.
Yeah.
That was horrible. It's horrible what they put them people through. You know, them people, I had to go through it too. It's horrible what they put people through. You know, I got to skip like 8 hours because I was upset, right? You know, so I got off.
Well, had you attended that 8 hours, you probably would have had a totally different.
Probably would have had a completely different view on the value of that training.
That was the good stuff.
Yeah.
That was the good stuff.
I missed the good stuff.
That 8 hours of epiphany. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Well, you guys got a lot going on, and the enterprise stuff is very interesting because I think that's something that, especially with the unrest and some of the other things going on in the last 18 months, that's a real thing for these folks to be concerned about, and they should.
Yeah.
And turning to distributed security, I think that's a step in the right direction, especially with the site surveys and that kind of thing just on their locations alone. Getting a peace of mind, though, can be a dangerous thing. They think that they don't need to continue that type of service that you guys provide, and it's the exact opposite. You need to keep building upon it and building upon it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the beauty of that, though, is, I mean, you know, there's plenty of companies out there that are doing contract services, right? I mean, they're getting uniform guards at whatever price. And it's a whole lot more cost effective for us to train 6 employees at an enterprise than it is for them to pay an ongoing contractual price to have just one more set of eyes on the ground that's going to do nothing but call 911 in an emergency.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or call in sick. So, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the benefit to using your employees in that role is that, I mean, they've got a vested interest in the business continuing to run. They're showing up for work every day anyway. So they, you know, cash the check every other week. You get to choose. You know, you're not just having the company send whoever they're going to send. You know, you get to actually vet, you know, the guys that you're going to have defending your enterprise as a business owner. So, I mean, you know, there's a ton of benefits to going that route. You know, there's just an awful lot of benefit there that you know, hasn't been fully realized at this point yet. You know, and it's built on the model, the distributed security model that we all saw in Afghanistan and Iraq, putting those places back together. You know, it's that same sort of idea. So
on that, guys, obviously you two are geographically separated. You know, kind of where's your corporate headquarters? Where's your satellite branches? So, for example, can somebody get the firearms portion up in Virginia, down by Mississippi? Where are you guys located at across the country?
Yeah. So our foot, essentially the I-80 corridor from Des Moines or the Quad Cities over to Pittsburgh and then down into Virginia. Now, we do have a virtual team, and we are kind of all over the place. I'm in Virginia, Ron's in Illinois. We're actually incorporated in Illinois. Our CEO is living in Central Michigan. We've got our doc is actually in Toledo. We've got training going on in Cody, Wyoming, Little Rock, Arkansas. You know, we're around quite a little bit.
Okay.
So, you know, there's potential in lots of different places, but our primary footprint is that, you know, 80 to 76 to 81 corridor, essentially Iowa, the Mississippi down to Virginia. So,
Okay.
And I noticed on your website too, I guess the website would be the best place to start if someone's looking for some training, correct? And I know you have a calendar that's updated pretty regularly.
We do. You know, again, for the first gun owners, the first time gun owners, probably the best place to start is firstgunowners.com. And the reason I say that is there are actually some training deals there, some training packages on the online Defense Academy and that sort of thing. For the more experienced gun owners, more experienced training guys, there's certainly a lot of benefit on the website and starting there, maybe with an advanced program or just, you know, getting a hold of our training calendar, like you mentioned, Mark, and getting a hold of us, finding a class time and place that, that makes sense for you. But yeah, it's there's a lot there. DistributedSecurity.com, FirstGunOwners.com. You know, we can accommodate an awful lot of folks in an awful lot of different places. So,
yeah, and along that line, I think I asked at least once, and you were talking about the students that don't have an instructor. You know, what's with that? So, when we originally designed this, we wanted it to be scalable. It was something that, you know, we didn't want everybody coming to one centralized location. We wanted to get, as we're doing now, getting, you know, many facilities up. And part of that challenge is finding students, instructors. And so, as Les mentioned, we have the individual daily or the individual training plan, daily training plan. And then we have our manuals. And those manuals work hand in hand with the website, with everything. So, you know, like for instance, you, Rick, you know, you'd be able to pick this up and be like, oh, you already know this stuff, but this is the format it's in. You'd be able to pick up a student right away and say, yeah, I can accommodate that. This is what you're going to do, this, et cetera, et cetera. So we've made it so the students, you know, we want to reach out with to other instructors. So, you know, they don't have to come up with the curricula. I mean, that's a long flipping process, man. That's a head banging process there. And so, you know, to be able to just pick up the curricula, use it, know that it's a good, competent curriculum, that it's solid for them, for their students, that, you know, okay, yeah, I'm not doing exactly this. I'm doing this other thing, but yeah, I can do this with this curricula and I can give you the product you want. So yeah, we made it really transportable like that.
Did you guys adjust your round counts at all? With everything going on as far as shortages, or do you kind of stay, or you're not a very high round count?
We're not over. we're not like a super high round. I mean, I know there's guys out there over 2 days that'll burn through 2,000 rounds, 1,500 rounds. We're pretty low round count on that end of it, because we make up big time for that with a dry practice 3 times a week. So, you know, it allows us, instead of to do a just trying to get, like I said, cram everything in with a whole bunch of shooting and potentially developing some bad habits. It allows us to draw that out over a longer period of time, so it actually sinks in with them. They don't need as many rounds because they're going to do a lot of practice at home, dry practice at home. So, yeah, the round count really hasn't changed that much. We may have went up 50, down 100, but that was more due to the course of fire than it was the you know, scuffling for rounds with people.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty typically 400 to 500 rounds, so.
Yeah.
For a day, or is that over a 2 day, or what's kind of your?
Over 2 days. Typically, it's coming up on 500 rounds over 16 hours.
Okay.
Well, it's been great talking to you, and it seems like you really got your stuff going in the right direction and have been for a long time, because.
Thank you.
You know, the dry fire stuff, you just don't hear that a lot. So
that was your piece I saw, I like that piece Rick. I saw that. I remember that now. You did a dry fire piece. I remember that.
I've done quite a bit of dry fire.
So
if you look at, even in my my instructional videos I did with Panteo, or just stuff on YouTube, whatever, I harp dry fire all the time, because nobody does it right.
It's
like a challenge, especially my LEOs. Hey man, here's my challenge to you. All I need is 15 minutes in a week. Just give me 5 minutes, 3 days a week. That's it. It might save your life. But hey, what do I know? So,
you know, it is literally the secret of champions. And I don't know why. I'll tell you why. Because it's work. You know, why do the work when you can go to the class? And, you know, I learned that last year.
But it's no different. It's no different going to the range. If you think about it, the range should be work too. But nobody's got a plan when they go out there. They just go out there with a couple boxes of bullets and let's go shoot whatever, and have no concept that, hey, all I'm doing is verifying my marksmanship and my recoil management for my dry fire training.
Right.
So in essence, my range session should be fairly short because I've done all my homework for my dry.
Exactly.
I'm just confirming everything.
How fucking crazy is that?
But, you know, what do I know?
It's not cool. It's not what you see on the social. And that's a lot of it. You know, it's a shame that it is. But, you know, the Patreon group that we have, they see a lot of the dry fire stuff. And that's where you make your money. We talk about it all the time. So,
yeah, but, students are like, man, you practice this a lot, right? What else you got? This is pretty much it, bro. I know it looks boring, but this is where you get the skills.
But here's the other thing I'm going to add in there. So it was, let me get my year straight. Yeah, it was last year. It shot before everything got crazy. The EVIC and their Airsoft, I went to their booth, sold me on Airsoft as a supplemental training tool. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, especially the way it is with their electronic target. And so much so, I did an entire instructional DVD on that thing.
Yes.
That's how much I feel. So yes, you can do dry fire, which don't get me wrong. Good to go. I highly support that. Dry fire, you can take to the next level because now I can actually get projectiles going
on
an electronic target, which, oh, by the way, I can do at 3 o'clock in the morning when I go, hey, you know, I can't sleep or whatever. Boom, go get some training in. And especially this day and age, it's super cost effective. I think I can get 5,000 BBs for like $20, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
You know, and train all you want. So there's plenty of tools out there. People just have to execute and make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Airsoft. You're absolutely right. Being able to get that visual and the recoil, there's certain things you just cannot do just dry practice. Certain malfunctions that you can't be working with and through that you can. But with that and UTM, I'm a big fan of UTM as well, except that's a lot more expensive than the Airsoft.
Yeah, that's super pricey on that end.
Pricey, but it's worth.
It is, but take a look at that gunpowder electronic target. That's a game changer when it comes to the whole Airsoft. That's what sold me on it. That whole target system alone.
I will hit you up on the side and get the, I'll write that down somewhere. What is it? Yeah.
So here's the easiest thing. Gunpowder target. Here's the easiest thing. Warhog.com, industry partners, scroll down to EVIC, press it. It'll link you right there to the 24-inch monitor. I think it's like $550. That thing is money. Or if you scroll on YouTube, you'll see I got a couple of videos on that thing. That system is what sold me, and it's an absolute game changer. I would, you know, if you could talk to your student base, and they could pick that up, I think it's an absolute game changer. So
definitely look into it. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah, buddy. Too easy. Well,
great show, and really appreciate you taking time away from your day. I know you guys are busy. I know, Ron, you got something coming up. You have to break away, and really hope if you have anything, you know, new coming up, or if you want to push something out, please, you know, feel free to come back to the show and sit with us again. Really enjoyed it.
Awesome.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, appreciate the opportunity to come on, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm doing a tour in 5 minutes. Just
we'll get some action, but yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah.
All right, man.
You guys take care. Appreciate it. Yeah, man.
They got a lot of stuff going on, man. And go to distributedsecurity.com and check out their website. It's very comprehensive. And go see what they got going on. But if you're listening to the audio side of the house, make sure you leave us a rating. Go ahead and give us a comment. Interact with those shows. But at the very least, on the audio and the video side, share these videos and share these audio episodes just to get the word out and pass them along and keep it going. So
just appreciate Jeremy, Brent, Abe, Mr. Chuckwagon, and Jeff for tuning in, dumping some comments. Greatly appreciated. So in closing, Duco stories. So here's the thing. And I'm going to kind of throw Mama under the bus here a little bit for this one, right? So you got to understand, when Duco first came home, he didn't understand things like goldfish, right? Mama made him understand what goldfish were. So
the little training, I sure don't know what they are. Yeah.
I guess she thought, hey, why should he be cheated? So now all of a sudden it's, you know, from the dog training side, right? They're all about their treats, you know, reward, all that other stuff. He comes home living the retired life and Mama just chumming him with the treats. It's like, hey, here you go, buddy. He's like, I got to do nothing and just get these snacks.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. But then it was, you know, you take it a step further. So he didn't know what it was to eat off the ground. You know, it wasn't like looking for snacks and, oh, Mama's sitting there making dinner. Something falls off the counter. Doop. Little toe point, and now he's sitting there getting snacks.
Yeah.
So you got to fast forward this a little bit, right? As things go on, she starts chumming them. you know, she's feeding him from the table. Now, where do you think he goes? Right there. And of course, he's got that heavy breath breathing on her leg. And she's like, my legs are getting all hot. And I'm like, you need to do something with your dog. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. You
own this one.
You train that one. Yeah. So you're going to keep that one. So her dog training, you know, and Duke's new learned response was hang out with mama when it's time to eat or just hang around her because he's either going to get snacks, scraps from the table. So, yeah. It's kind of it was just a pretty cool pretty cool transition. We'll talk about almost losing digits maybe on the next one. Talk about that as notes.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know what? We're looking forward. We got another show coming up this week. It's going to be the launch of the new Splinter show.
Yeah, buddy. So what we're doing is we're going to launch the Warhog Words of Wisdom. Here's the thing. This was something I started with Duco. So what you're going to do or what you're going to hear, see, it's probably better if you watch it, but we're going to put it on the audio portion as well. But it was me and Duke. I wanted to do, I just dubbed it Words of Wisdom, just a raw, unedited. Yep. And there's a little show art for it.
Yeah. Sneak peek.
That's it, man. Sneak peek for those of you that's still tuned on. So good for you guys.
Yeah.
But that's basically a shot that Mark did from our very first one. So I believe that was from our last round of chemo down in Georgia. And I just threw the camera up and we just talked about osteosarcoma in dogs and stuff. And here's the thing, guys, you know, I think we kind of hit on it before. I don't want to say, you know, procrastinating, but I wanted to do more of these things earlier on and I didn't, and I wish I had. So kind of my takeaway to you guys, if you're going to do something, do it. You know, yeah. I got it. I was trying to get the studio all set up and wanted it to look nice. You know what? Just grab that stuff, man. Or just do whatever, you know, same thing with the journaling, you know, I'm at least journaling daily kind of, hey, what my day consists of. Boom. Yeah. Flip-flopped around. Flip-flop. I like it.
You make a very, good point. You're right. It would have been nice to have many more, mm-hmm. but the ones that you do have are that much more important to you. Yeah. And it's driven you to make sure that it doesn't happen again. So now we're having a whole new show.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of good stuff coming out of that, you know, out of a situation that you wish had been, you know, a little bit different and had more episodes with him in it.
Yep. Yeah. So. You know, I think we've got, I won't leave the number. I'll let you guys just tune in and check it out. But, you know, the thing is, my plan is to, continue that, because it was something we wanted to do. I don't know if you want to do, he's glad to hang out with dad, but I said, yeah, we wanted to do that together. But it's just another way. Again, will I say, hey guys, Rick and Duke, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
Maybe.
I who knows, you know, we'll figure that out, but I will tell you this. I'm not going to let the cat out of the bag. Because again, when the Duco ones end, I've already got a plan how we're doing the next series, and you guys are gonna have to tune in because there's gonna be something there, and it's probably gonna be more on the visual side. I mean, we'll still put the audio out, that's fine, but you'll miss a little bit something by just catching the audio. So yeah,
it's gonna be a great show. It's gonna be
it was something we want to do. I let life, I let business, I let other things get in the way, and nope. It's going to be a focus. We're going to get it done. We're figuring out how to get the screen all set. Mark's already got the art for it. And trust me, guys, when this thing kicks, it's going to be epic. And I think we're going to try to shoot for every Thursday, right? That's going
to
be
We're going to try to go for Thursdays, this week being the first. Mm-hmm. So we'll be posting something on that tomorrow. So it's going to be up and running. And then we have another idea for another show coming up. We want to get this Warhog Words of Wisdom out there. And it's important to us to get those out there with Duco on there and kick that off with a bang. And I think it's just going to be great. So,
And you've been, listen here, bud, I got to tell you, you've been spot on, right?
So
you redid the show art, stuck Duco on there. You know, you got the Words of Wisdom pretty much ripped that exactly from episode number one. I mean, totally spot on as far as the support goes. Everybody that's, you know, listening has some type of touch with me, has been fantastic. You know, Duke's memorial page continues to grow, which is fantastic. We'll have some maple flavored Teutonic bourbon rolling out here shortly, which, yes,
dude, I'm right. All over that, man.
Dude, that's my favorite. That stuff is delicious. Not too sweet. I mean, it just has that. It's hard to describe, man. It's just that.
It has to be experienced. Yeah.
Yep. So. And the beauty is too, you know, it's going to charity, you know, so yeah. proceeds from that, you know, and yeah, guys, it's just been
all good stuff.
All great stuff.
And then keep an eye out and watch that show on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And we're excited about it. So
yeah, buddy.
All right, man. Another one in the books, Rick.
You know it, pal.
All right. See you shortly. Probably. We got all kinds of things going on.
Yes, you will.
All right, pal. Thanks, Rick. See you, buddy.
See you, buddy. Thank you.